Breaking down the top NBA draft prospects across the globe, you're listening to the Prospect Podcast with Ethan Piotta and Alex Brown. And welcome back to another edition, first edition of the 2021 NBA Draft Prospect Podcast, our first episode of season two, if you will. I'm Ethan Piotta, joined today again by Alex Brown. Alex, it's refreshing, like we talked about, to watch exciting NBA basketball prospects in action again.
Oh yeah, I'm so hyped. I'm so glad everything's back. Being able to see what we can, it's just been great so far. Really, really thrilled.
Yeah, I mean, it's just there's games. Obviously, games are being canceled and postponed all over the place due to COVID-19 and unfortunately players catching it and having to teams having to take necessary precautions, but games have just been, it's felt like kind of like March Madness at some times in terms of the way that games have just been kind of flowing off the screen. Great matchups today as well, as we're recording on Tuesday. I know you've got a big Illinois game tonight against Duke.
Yeah, I know, I'm super excited to talk Illinois. I think they're one of the best teams in college basketball, to tell you the truth. And I think they have one of the brightest futures as far as, you know, being a rebuilt program. I really like the young guys that they have on that team.
Yeah, super fun to watch this year. And as Alex said, we'll get into Illinois. We'll get into the Kentucky kids, BJ Boston, Terrence Clark, Isaiah Jackson, Devin Askew. We'll get into Arizona State's top two guys as well. And then some of our observations on potentially the top returners and then the questions you guys left. But we're going to start off talking about kind of the top of this class, at least. And there's a lot of guys, I know me personally, where I felt like they should be put top five, or they deserve that top five placement or label in this class. And I mean, it's just impossible to even figure that out, and nor should it be figured out this early in the college season. But five guys that kind of have been towards the top in terms of performers this year, and one of them is the obvious answer, and I know we definitely have some definitive thoughts about this guy in the discourse that's been about him early on. But Cade Cunningham, Oklahoma State, the clear number one pick early on, in my opinion. I know you feel the same way.
Yeah, Cade is just a phenomenal all around player. Can play both ends. He has the positional size to be an elite jumbo initiator or wing initiator, whichever you want to call him. He could be the initiator on a super team. He's going to make everybody around him better. If you put him in a situation where he has great off-ball creators, guys with gravity, elite shooters, or just good shooters, honestly. He'll probably make good shooters elite shooters. Yeah. Based on the looks he'll generate. But I mean, we throw around the word heliocentric. To a degree, it can be applied to Cade. And I think at the NBA level, as he continues to develop, that's something we're going to use with regards to his game, because he can do it all. And using him as a constant advantage creator, that's just a scary, scary thought for opposing teams, because he can do it all.
He really can do it all. He's just, I've mentioned, I think he's one of the highest basketball IQ enriched prospects that I've ever observed.
Oh, yeah.
He's just so smart at leveraging every single situation to his advantage, whether it's him being 6'8", and by the way, he's going to still fill out in that frame, I think. I think he's still got some filling out to do to become even stronger, and he's already a massive human being, as of now. But whether that's posting up smaller guards that can't check him, or getting a switch and being able to use his shiftiness and craft to take advantage of bigger guys switched onto him, he just makes every situation that he's in easier. And it's fun to watch. It's hard to explain like how how fun it is to watch this man play basketball. And like you said, I mean, he's going to make everyone around him better. He's a situation-proof prospect. Whatever team he ends up going to, whatever situation that it is, obviously some are better than others, but he's going to better that situation. You look at it already at Oklahoma State. He's turned poor off-ball creators, shooters, whatever, into decent passable guys, and he's turned around that entire program and team. And just because of his gravity as a scorer and how he leverages it to create situations and advantages and opportunities for others on the basketball court. And one more thing I just want to mention on Cade is everyone seemed so surprised and impressed by him making off-dribble jump shots, off-catch jump shots right away. And I know that's an area of like swing skill for him. But it's like he's been doing this. Like he's not Ben Simmons. Yes. He's not Ben Simmons coming in. There's no questions in my mind that he was going to be a passable to above average three-point shooter early on in his career, shooter in general early on in his career. And he just continues to prove that off the dribble, out of the pull-up, off the catch. He's done it all. And he's got some room to grow for sure. On that side of it, but I mean, it's already coming along, you know, as expected. It's not something that should be a complete surprise or garnered as a fluke or anything like that.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't think I had any doubt in my mind he was going to be a good shooter. I think he could be quite a plus as a shooter. The question is more just getting his volume up, keeping that efficiency. Is he going to be able to do that? Be a number one scorer? Or just, you know, your lead initiator in general, maybe secondary scoring creator. But regardless, he's going to be awesome. And you just can't overthink Cade. I mean, he's a 6'8 point guard with an elite IQ, three-level scoring, great defensive tools, good instincts. I mean, don't overthink Cade. He's number one.
Yeah, he's number one. There's not a major flaw in his game, and it's just you can nitpick all you want on him, but like you're saying, don't overthink this. This is a once in a lifetime prospect. These guys don't come around often, and I would say just enjoy watching him play basketball this year, because it's great for college basketball that he stuck with Oklahoma State, you know, despite their ban on the postseason. And despite them not being, you know, a powerhouse in the college basketball realm, the fact that he stuck with them through all that says a lot about his character as well.
Yeah, especially if you're a team that's going to take him at the top of the draft. You know, if you're not a very good team, you want to know that your guy's going to be loyal if you're going to build around a guy like Cade, which, again, would highly recommend. But, right. I think on the intangible side, he also has, you know, that leader aspect to him. From what I've seen, he's quite a likable guy. He seems to have the respect of his teammates, and you know, he's laid back, but he competes. It's pretty much the perfect combo for, you know, a lead initiator prospect.
Absolutely.
So don't overthink Cade. He's number one.
For sure. But
some people are overthinking it so far, and this is mostly due to Jalen Suggs' recent success. And I love Jalen Suggs. He is currently a top three prospect for me. I think he's currently at number two. Of course, the board is changing rather often due to the nature of the season. But the conversation of Jalen versus Cade really – I know some people think it should be happening, but I love Jalen, but I don't think it should happen. Yeah. I think he is a strong candidate for the number two spot from what he's shown so far. I mean, elite decision-making, his competitiveness, his skill level is just – it's super, super impressive. It's about what we expected, but for him to be as successful – early on as he's been is surprising some people. And so I think they're putting that surprise into their evaluation, I suppose. But I think he's a strong number two candidate. he just does not have as much as Cade has.
Yeah, I mean, in that number two spot is going to be changing probably all year. I mean, there's a number of guys that warrant that consideration and will continue to warrant that consideration. And I'm one of the, I wouldn't say complete out on him skeptics, but I was skeptical of Jalen Suggs offensively with his advantage creation coming in. And I mean, his willingness to just shoot, attack those advantages, playing on a great team in Gonzaga where there's spots to attack and create and you know, create opportunities for others all over the floor with the personnel that they have. Offensively, he's been so good at that. And defensively as well, that's where I was high on him. That's where a lot of people were high on him coming in. I love the application to his football background, how evident it is when he's in passing lanes, with his movement and his hips defensively, his anticipation, everything he does defensively. He's really an elite guard prospect on that defensive side of the ball. And I think it's just, I mean, obviously there was that huge scare with him going out with what seemed like a really bad injury. And he came back late in the game and was able to play. And he's still put up, like, I think his box plus minus is plus like 13 early on this year. And they've played some good teams. He's just an impactful player. He's going to make a team really happy at the next level as a kind of a consolation prize to Cade, even maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be thrilled to have Jalen Suggs on my team. He's awesome, high intangibles. You know, there's not a lot wrong with his game. So he's a strong candidate for number two, but seriously, do not overthink Cade as number one, because imagine Cade on Gonzaga. Think about the you have to understand the context between, you know, if Cade was on Gonzaga working with shooters like Kispert, high gravity post operators like Timmy, and other off guard players, like, you know, Ayayi, even other initiators like Nembhard, and you got also defensive specialists and Anton Watson. So you have so much more to work with if you're Jalen Suggs compared to Cade Cunningham. And based Suggs off his credit. Track record, yeah, it Suggs, I mean, yeah, I'm by no means meaning Suggs. I think he's been amazing. But I think Cade would be even more amazing in this role 100%. Because of the context. Because if you look at him at Montvert, like, he made everybody better on a super team. And that team was unstoppable. Yeah. You know, so.
Context
is going to be really important.
It's important to have watched these guys before they get to this level of their playing careers. And like, yeah, it's a great point about Montverde playing with Scotty Barnes, playing with some you know, Caleb Houston, and I believe Derek Whitehead was also a prominent player for them last year. He's going to be up in the ranks in a few seasons. It's important to note, like you said, I mean, Cade on Gonzaga would just be insane. Because right now he's having to create every single advantage for himself. He's having to make everyone else better by himself with virtually little to no help. And he'd get that in a Gonzaga setting. But again, like you're saying, credit to Suggs as well for being able to take advantage of the situation that he's in and star in his role. Moving on, though, to another prospect that's kind of been bounced around, that number two, even number one, and again, don't overthink it, but Evan Mobley from USC. He's must-watch television this year, I'd say, early on. He's just so fluid, so fluid in his movements at his size. He's just got insane coordination for someone of his stature. He's just extremely light on his feet for a big guy that's 7 foot. And he seems comfortable. He seems not rushed in every single situation. He's still developing as a shooter, which will maximize his offensive potential. But in every other facet of offense, with its finishing, with its touch around the rim, offensive rebounding, just being the screen setter and being a tremendous short roll passer early on, or passing out of double teams as well, using his vision to look over smaller defenders. He's done everything for USC early on this year. And he's played some excellent teams, excellent competition as well. That game against Matt Harms, I'd fair to say he dominated Matt Harms in that game. which is not something that you often expect from a freshman big guy against an experienced big guy like Harms. And he's just been a joy to watch. I really do like Evan Mobley. Again, not number one, but he's probably number two for me right now.
Wow, that's high praise. I'm glad to hear that you're buying into Mobley. I really liked him in the preseason. I just thought he, as seven-footer that can attack from the perimeter, you know, create for himself as a slasher to some degree and impact the game defensively as much as he does, he could really be a special player. And seeing his processing speed this year has just been a joy to watch early on. I think it's the separating factor between bigs like him and Wiseman. You know, why we tend to value these guys more is because they process the game at a really, really, really impressive rate.
Really different rates, polar opposites almost, if you will.
Polar opposites. A couple things I would like to note, nitpicking on Mobley. I think the shot, it does have potential. Again, like you said, his fluidity, coordination is so impressive, but his jump shot needs to be reworked a little bit. It's kind of, the timing of it's rather odd. He has a little bit of a hitch sometimes, just seems out of sync. So I think it's something that can definitely be fixed based on his tools. But if he gets that down, you're looking at a guy that could play even the modern four spot because he can pass the ball. He could, you know, he could be a pass dribble shoot guy at that point. Yeah. So he could be super intriguing on both ends as a four because of how quickly he covers ground, his ability to, you know, protect the rim. But he wouldn't have to bulk up to play the five spot. If he started really shooting the ball and became a more modern four, which I'm really hoping for, because that would be such a fun mismatch.
Oh yeah, I mean, he already shows willingness to attack closeouts at like an NBA level, with the way that he's comfortable in his handle and really strong with his handle on the floor for someone of his size. You know, he's been attacking closeouts and obviously maximizing him will be as kind of like you said, that modern four. If he can turn into like a pick and pop guy, I mean, it's just going to be an absolute hassle to guard this guy offensively. I didn't even mention defensively for Mobley. He's probably the best defensive minded big man in this class, maybe sans Isaiah Jackson. But there's obviously some differences in feel and overall, you know, processing speed defensively. Usman, yeah, you can mention
my number one,
Usman, as well. But I just think with Mobley, I mean, the way he just eats up so much space, so much ground with his length, he really could be one of those rare, like truly switch bigs at the NBA level at his peak. Like honestly, like the way that he's able to move his feet, he's gonna get beat because he's a huge human being, but his wingspan being so lengthy. And he's got such long strides, long steps. It helps his recovery a lot. And I mean, again, defensively, the way he eats up ground, the way he alters shots is probably the best in this class. It might be one of the best individual skills in this class. His altering of shots, the way that he's able to affect, the way an offense is run, down below. I mean, it's just, he's great at not fouling as well. He's great at just using his arms, using that law of verticality, challenging shots, blocking shots with great timing. It's just one of the best things to watch is him on that defensive side.
Yeah, he's really fun to watch. I'm really upset I couldn't see him in person this year when they were supposed to come to FGCU. I had it on my calendar. I had like my I had everything in order, and it just fell through. It's one of the great disappointments of 2020. But I love watching him. I'd love for him to be more assertive sometimes. I mean, he makes the right play so much that sometimes I wish he'd just go and attack and use his skill set. But
yeah,
he's awesome. He's a great, great prospect that definitely should be in top three consideration.
And I think, you know, that attacking,
right now, but love him.
Yeah, and I think that attacking, you know, like you mentioned, is a great point. I think that's going to come as he becomes more comfortable and more diverse in his ability to operate out of the post as a scorer. Because right now as a passer, he's tremendous out of the post. He recognizes double teams. He finds shooters that are open. But there's been only flashes of him really, you know, making a true post move this year against a legitimate defender. And I want to see more of it. Like you're saying, I think it will come as he becomes more skilled, more fluid, and more comfortable with his movements down below, because he could just be a matchup nightmare for teams in the future if he continues to develop.
Yeah, and I also don't want to have him siloed into like that, you know, you have to be a post operator big. And I know that's not what you're saying, but I'd like to see USC use him for what he is. You know, use his outlier tools as an attacker and not try to make him a physical post player, because that's not what he is, at least not yet. Use what he brings to the table. Use that processing speed.
Yeah, and he was, you know, like he has been, which has been a pleasant surprise too, because of the way Andy Enfield and USC almost last year, I know we talked about this on the podcast, I think, about how they kind of relegated Onyeka Okongwu to literally not allowing him to shoot from outside at all, which I thought was a skill that he could potentially have showcased at the college level, or at least tried to develop a little bit. And they relegated him to a pure dunker spot, short roll, pick and roll post guy at USC. But it looks like Andy Enfield's given him the freedom to, you know, take the ball up at sometimes from coast to coast. And it's definitely different watching someone that large, you know, handle the ball like going up the court. But another Pac-12 guy that's been super interesting, Sierra Canyon, Zaire Williams. I know we're both big fans of Zaire here. And, man, he just projects as such an elite shooter. He's in the perfect offense right now at Stanford. I'd say the biggest thing so far has been his ball handling has been something that definitely needs to be improved upon going forward. He kind of lacks burst with the ball, if you will. High dribbler as well, to put it really simply. But as a shooter, as a space creator, he's got some extreme craft to his game, and he's a great off-movement, off-catch, just an elite overall shooting prospect with a major defensive upside as well. I've already kind of noted how I think he's made strides defensively from game one to game two and so far and so on.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy that projects well as somebody who's going to continue to grow, continue to learn the game. I've heard very good things about the intangible side for him as far as, you know, his ability to pick up new concepts and work on his skills. But I think similar to what, and I don't like lumping these two guys into the same category because they're not similar at all, but similar to what Anthony Edwards did in the second half of that famous Michigan State game, I thought, you know, that was the flash of how great, in theory, he could be at his best. The shot-making performance against Alabama, despite the kind of lower volume of it, just showed how good this guy could be. I mean, he was hitting long threes. He was hitting shots off the dribble with ease. His shot looked beautiful. Again, the interior game was kind of non-existent, but as far as from a shot-making perspective, I thought he was incredibly impressive with those flashes. But in shot-making prospects like this, you're going to see a high degree of volatility early on, especially if they're struggling to get to the rim, which seems to be a theme with Zaire so far. So if he can put on a little bit of muscle and add some interior scoring to his game, you're looking at just a crazy elite wing prospect. Because he has almost all you want in a wing guy.
Yeah, just major two-way upside. And good point about the finishing too around the rim. He's going to have to he's definitely going to have to – and I think he will. I'm normally never too worried about, you know, prospects putting on that weight that's needed. And I know that's kind of our philosophy as well. It's never been something that sways our evaluation of a guy either way. Just look at Tyrell Terry from last year. But Zaire, well, I'm obviously Zaire Williams. I think, you know, 5 of 10 so far around the bucket, according to Synergy. I'd like to just see more attempts, because he really was an elite inside player in high school and AAU ball as well, just because of his springiness and athleticism and his slipperiness around the rim. And it's gotten tougher because of the physicality of college and playing some of these major college schools early on. But I think it's an area that he could definitely improve upon, like you said, going forward.
Yeah, and it's important to note with Zaire, he is an upside play. He is – you have to look at him like he has a great base as far as a 6'8 wing with the mental side there and such a smooth stroke. That's not something you find every day. So it's going to be a lot of flashes early on. I'm really intrigued to see what he's going to be like at his best this year, because his last few games have been rather poor, to say the least. You know, Indiana, he was 0 for 5 from deep and fouled out, you know, 4 points and 1 of 10 from the field. It's like, that's not what you want to see. But I think he's only going to continue to get better. I just think him having the freedom to continue to make mistakes and develop the skill set is going to be really fun to watch.
Definitely a good note about him as an upside play. Moving on to our last guy kind of this top tier of guys, Jalen Johnson from Duke. Really interesting prospect, someone I'm super high on. I still think he's near my top three right now. But again, 6'9 or so, 6'8", 6'9", point forward. With a good handle that's been used in a different role than he was, you know, formerly used in high school and AAU at Duke so far. He's been used more of as kind of that big guy that gets to handle it occasionally and gets to showcase his playmaking and vision from the high post. But he's really impressed me so far defensively. I think on the ball, I think he's been really interesting. He's got some room to grow. Not necessarily speaking on him guarding guards, but more about him down low. He had that 19 rebound performance, 4 blocks as well in game one. His anticipation as a shot blocker, it's one of the best secondary skills for any prospect in this class regarding Johnson. I think he's got immense upside as a kind of a secondary rim protector. But there are the struggles that I've seen early on. Especially, we're highlighted against Michigan State, and I'm interested to see what happens tonight. We're recording this before the Illinois-Duke game is played tonight. He really struggled against the size, the length of Michigan State's front court. His horizontal athleticism in the half court seemed really underwhelming at times. He wasn't really able to leverage those situations, use his burst to get past guys of his size that could also move their feet. And in turn, it turned out to be not a great offensive performance from him, and his decision-making still questionable. And he also lacks volume and willingness to shoot and mechanics aesthetically from behind the arc. So he's definitely got some room to grow on offense, but his tools, his athleticism, his physicality, I think it warrants him, again, still a spot in the top five or so early on. He's, again, kind of like Zaire, an upside play project, someone that's going to have to really develop over the course of this year. But he has had his struggles early on.
Yeah. What I'd like to hear from you is your opinion on his potential as kind of a large initiator or wing initiator, because that was kind of the base that I liked with him. You know, he had flashes of just great playmaking in high school. And so far it's, you know, 6 assists to 12 turnovers. What do you think about his playmaking projection moving forward?
I still buy it. I really do. And again, that's same here with me. That's what had me really high on Johnson coming in, was the fact that he kind of was like, to put it in a different way, kind of like to a lesser degree in terms of Cade as that kind of jumbo initiator, obviously not anywhere near his skill level. Or his proficiency as a playmaker, as a shooter, anything else he does on offense, but kind of in that role. And I, you know, the thing is, he hasn't really been used in that role a whole lot at Duke early on. They've kind of used him under the basket, and early in the first game, they're playing him a lot off the ball. And I do buy him as that kind of that playmaker at his size. I think that's something that will develop over time because he's got a good handle. He's strong with the ball. He does flash really interesting segments of his playmaking, of his vision. I'm interested to see how that continues to expand because he's got some pieces around him at Duke this year.
Indeed. He's a guy I'm definitely going to have my eye on as far as looking for those tools to be shown this year. But I agree. I think he's going to be a really interesting defensive prospect, especially as a secondary rim protector, but still a guy I'm going to have my eye on as far as looking for that wing initiator archetype and if he can truly fit it. But moving on, I would love to hear you talk about Kentucky's prospects. What are your early perceptions? I know you have some strong thoughts on Devin, so why don't you go ahead and share those with me?
I'll save Devin for last for Kentucky because he's not an NBA guy, unfortunately, at this point. And hopefully that changes as the year goes on, but it's just not. He's struggling at the collegiate level, and but BJ Boston to start off again. I've been super high on BJ Boston throughout his high school days and playing at Sierra Canyon and whatnot. He's still that high motor guy that wants to beat you one on one. His greatest tool, obviously, is his shot creation, and we saw it in high school. He was a magician at creating space. And making contested shots and being just a bucket getter in general. And unfortunately, what we've seen at Kentucky is, for one, his shot isn't falling at all. Off the catch, off the dribble, wherever it is, there's been some super weird moments too where he almost doesn't look like he knows what to do with his body when he's shooting those fadeaways that look so easy to him at the high school level. He's kind of just been thrown off altogether. I really do think that is because that extra burst that we've seen from him at previous levels, or at least I saw from him at previous levels, isn't there. He can't use his physicality. He can't use his slipperiness, his explosion, his extension around the rim to his advantage as much as he wants to anymore because he's encountering bigger defenders, better defenders, and I really think it's throwing off his entire game. I the catch and shoot still hasn't been great. He's got a pretty decent looking shot, but he still has that dip from high school that I hoped would be corrected. That kind of almost makes his shot two motions. His base is still off kilter. And he really just hasn't, he hasn't been put in any pick and rolls. He hasn't been put in any situations that make his life easier at Kentucky early on. And him struggling really is a big reason, other than the fact that they just don't have a point guard on the roster for their early 1-3 start.
Yeah, he has not been super impressive so far, but I do like his physicality as far as projecting him as a finisher, and I know you do as well. I think that's a good sign to see. He's not giving up down low or avoiding contact. He still is attacking, and as long as he doesn't lose that fire, I think he's still going to really hit on a lot of his scoring upside.
Yeah, for sure. He's got the tools to be an elite finishing prospect with his, again, elite body control still. We've seen in that college, elite elevation, elite extension. And it's really encouraging to have seen that still when the frame still isn't, you know, there. And I think obviously his finishing upside is only going to get better and grow larger as he develops that frame. It's going to make life a lot easier for him.
What do you think about his defensive projection from what you've seen right so far?
So it's like, it's weird with BJ Boston because I've never evaluated him in the past as an above average defender. He's mainly just been average, and I couldn't really attribute that to whether it was just the lack of effort at the high school level or because he should have tools for someone that's 6'7" and can kind of move like he does. And, you know, at least watching him early on, he mirrors at first kind of the perfect technique that you see on defense. And then he doesn't get in a stance. And then he's standing up too tall. And he either, twitches his hips and then he gets blown by off the dribble. Or he's being attacked into his, into kind of a standing straight up posture that's, getting him off positioning from smaller guards because he's got kind of a high center of gravity. And I think, he's struggled on ball defensively. I think he's going to get better. He's definitely been active and engaged off ball, which is good to see because he's got, you know, such that long wingspan that should allow him to get in passing lanes and should allow him to rack up stocks as kind of an off ball potential terror wrecker in the future. But, you know, to put it lightly, I mean, he's been average at best early on defensively. I think he will get better, though.
Well, that's good to hear as far as your optimism. But, yeah, he hasn't impressed me too much. I think his the tools that he has, he should be doing more with them. But anyway, moving on to Terrence Clark, what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, Clark's probably been Kentucky's best prospect so far throughout their first four games. I think that's kind of safe to say. I worry if his shooting and his scoring numbers will persist as it goes on because his form isn't pretty. He's got really major concerns with his base as a jump shooter. There's been those screenshots, and I've taken note of them as well, of his knees basically tapping together on some of his catch and shoot opportunities. It just doesn't look comfortable, or looks painful. So I think shooting numbers are going to drop off as the year goes on. But man, it's hard to deny how exciting he is at his size, with his shift, with his handle, and with his length. He could early have a top five handle in this class, but we've known that about Terrence Clark. He's a great ball handler at his size. I've liked what I've seen from his vision as well, setting up teammates, setting up opportunities. He's not an elite. I think people have like a misconception almost that he's an elite, like, interior finishing prospect, elite athlete around the rim. He's really not. He just generates a lot of space and a lot of creation, getting those advantages with his handle and with his movements. So I do wonder, you know, if the shot's not going, where does he affect the game moving forward? He's had some flashes defensively. He's had some games where he's really good defensively. But, you know, I do think the shot's going to drop off a little bit as the year goes on, and it's going to be a tougher road for him than it's been so far.
When you say drop off, he's 3 of 12 so far, you know, 25% from deep. He has more turnovers than attempted threes. Is that a trend you'd expect to continue? Is that what you're saying by drop off? Or do you think he's just not going to be a plus shooter moving forward, at least early on?
Right. I'm definitely on the second part, not going to be a plus shooter moving on. I'm more talking about his pull up, his mid range. It's been definitely been his primary way of scoring is off the bounce, off the dribble, kind of in that mid range, less about the 3-point opportunities that he's taken. But I'm more talking about that, I think, taking a little bit more of a drop off as the year goes on.
Gotcha. Well, Isaiah Jackson.
Isaiah Jackson, I've been impressed with Isaiah Jackson. Obviously, there's still those moments where you're questioning what he's doing, but he's an elite shot blocking prospect, and it's he had that one 7 or 8 block game early on, I believe, against Kansas, and he was Kentucky's best player that game, undoubtedly. He's a pretty tenacious rebounder as well. Good anticipation. I think his feel is better than he's given credit for on things that don't involve him having to make a decision with the basketball. So in terms of his offensive and defensive rebounding, his shot blocking, he's been really, really impressive just with his he's got elite timing, probably the best in the class, blocking shots as kind of that help side rim protector, and just eye popping, obviously vertical pop as well. That's his best quality, is his shot blocking. That's what's going to have him talked about going into this draft. I'm still trying to get a feel for what he does, what he could, you know, project to be offensively, because his frame doesn't necessarily project well for him to be a center at the next level. He kind of seems like he'll have the body of a 4 guy, but he doesn't. He can't shoot. And his playmaking is drastic at times. Although there have been, especially in the last game against Georgia Tech, he flashed a little bit with his playmaking, which was good to see. But concerned about him on the offensive side, and defensively, I do buy the interior defending. Obviously, it's one of the best in this class.
Yeah, I think the defense is where he's going to make his mark. as far as a guy with that mobility, timing, and, you know, athleticism. But I share your concerns on the offensive end because, I mean, other than being maybe an athletic role man, so far I don't see a lot of offensive situations I would use him in. You know, he's not that great of a screener as far as, you know, he's got a thin frame. He's, you know, I don't see him being an interior self-creator. So if he's Derek Jones Jr., as far as in that archetype, is he a guy you even think about in this draft class, or is he a guy that's going to probably be more of a better bet later on?
I think definitely. I mean, I'd say I have him first round just for now, just because of that defensive upside, borderline first round. But it's definitely a good point. I mean, I'd love to see a number of these guys going into this draft take that extra year. You always want to. It's probably not realistic with Isaiah Jackson. He's probably going to come out because he's going to put up those insane shot blocking numbers and rebounding numbers this year at Kentucky, which is, you know, I have to enter in this draft because I, you know. So I think he's definitely going to end up coming out this year, but it's a great point. I think he'd be someone that kind of benefits from staying 2 to 3 years in a place and improving offensively, defensively, and then making his money that way.
Sure. And lastly, let's hear your thoughts on Devin.
Right. Quick thoughts on Devin Askew. And I mean, obviously Kentucky doesn't have a point guard right now. Everyone thought this was going to be Devin Askew's role coming in, cause he's presumed to be a five star. And I hate talking down on guys that are, you know, prominent in playing basketball. It's just, unfortunately, watching Devin Askew in high school in person, playing against him, and then obviously going back and watching some of his film coming in, I never understood the five-star label on Devin Askew. He just doesn't offer any kind of creation upside at the moment. I'm struggling to see what he does positively on the floor because he's not a great defender either. He's a severe lack of primary playmaking as well for Kentucky's primary ball handler. And you can really make the case that him underperforming, if you would even say that, I think he was put into a really tough situation with the label that he was given going in. It's hurt the rest of that team. That's a big reason why they're 1-3. They don't have a point guard. This was supposed to be Askew's role, but I think people are starting to realize he's just not the playmaker that was advertised going in.
Yeah, I think there's some considerable flaws there. I mean, I thought it was evident when when Coach Cal was showing him how to make an entry pass during the game, like how to set up your entry passes to the post. I was like, wow, like that is that's got to be embarrassing if you're Devin Askew. And looking at the numbers so far, again, low sample size, but, you know, 13 turnovers to 8 attempted threes. When shooting is probably your best asset, you should probably be shooting the ball a little bit more, or at least spacing it off the ball. Because he really doesn't have a lot of creation upside. He's not a plus pick and roll player, not a guy that's going to generate breakdowns. So I think you're looking at a guy that may end up kind of in that Emmanuel Quickley spacer role. It's kind of like a tweener guard with the shooting upside, but not a lot else. So it'll be interesting to see where he ends up from a role perspective, but I really haven't been impressed so far. I think it's been a rather poor performance.
And I think he needs to change the scenery.
Yeah, and based on what you said about, you know, playing against him, I know we talked about it a little bit before the show, but you know, that's never a good sign either when you see your play against a guy and you just don't get it. But yeah, totally. But
some guys you get. No, some guys you get 100%. They're, trust me, when Bol Bol walked into the gym when I was a sophomore in high school and his head was touching the ceiling and then he started dribbling the ball up the court, I got why he was a five-star prospect. Trust me. There are situations where you completely understand why. I never understood why with Devin Askew, unfortunately.
I love it. I'm going to go ahead and talk about Illinois because Illinois has been kind of my team so far. I've watched – pretty much all of their games so far. And I really love this team. I think it's one of the best teams in college basketball outside of rankings. I think they have some legit prospects on their team. Mainly I'll be referring to Ayo Dosunmu and Adam Miller as far as 2020 or 2021 prospects. Man, 2020 has really drilled me into saying that. But and then, of course, they have some 2022 guys with Curbelo, Hawkins, and maybe Brandon Lieb. And then Georgi Bajanashvili going overseas potentially. But I'm going to start with Ayo because everybody loves Ayo. He is one of the best players in college basketball right now. He's averaging 23 points, nearly 24 points. 7 boards, 6 assists on 50% shooting and 47% from deep so far. He has been pretty spectacular. Even in his worst game against Baylor, he still put up good numbers. And even though his efficiency kind of declined because of just the quality of that defense that Baylor has. But Ayo is a high intangible guy you're going to legit love on your team. Everybody that talks about him likes him. Coach loves him. You know, his teammates love him. He's got a great family, really great support structure. Just all the good intangible sides are there with Ayo. On the court, early on in his freshman and his sophomore year, I didn't want him to declare just because I thought he was lacking a way to really leverage his form of advantage creation consistently, because he is an elite downhill athlete. And early on, you really saw him struggle with, you know, using his athleticism to create advantages, because it wasn't as easy as just, you know, driving at will anymore. These college defenses were really messing with him. And his off-ball value wasn't significant enough to really mitigate this. Now he is really controlling the pace well. He's picking his spots to use his athleticism extraordinarily well. He's showing that he can be a plus pick and roll initiator as a downhill playmaker, you know, manipulator guy. And his off-ball footwork and game in general is just blossomed so far. I mean, the comfort and the confidence he has is not something I was expecting. And it's clear that his, you know, pre-draft work last year and work over the off season really have paid off with this shot. Because if he can shoot off the ball, I think he deserves some legit first round talk. And absolutely, I think that's probably where he ends up if this streak continues, because he does so much on the floor. He's a really strong secondary initiator prospect with high intangibles, and I'm really, really liking what I've seen so far from Ayo. He's just getting better every day, and just great to see.
Yeah, it's a great point. And there's that one story that kind of surfaced early in the year about Ayo getting on the freshman about not diving and saying, you can't play here. I mean, that's the kind of leader that you want on the top tier college basketball team. That's the kind of the things that you want to hear from you know, a guy that's going to project to obviously be a potential first round guy from the teammate side. He's got great positional size still. And again, like you said, super happy, both him and Kofi, who initially, I think they both declared, right? And then they both initially came back. Yeah. Definitely the right move there, in my opinion. 8 for 17 from three to start the year. Great that start. Off-ball value, if he continues to show that he can play off the ball, because that's where he's going to be at the NBA level, absolutely the first-round consideration will happen and will be warranted.
Yeah, and think about what that does for his pull-up too. I mean, he right. has a great mid-range pull-up, and if you have a lot of shooting gravity from your off-ball game, you're going to get more chances to use those mid-range pull-ups and just get downhill in general, where he excels. Where I dare say he's an elite downhill prospect as far as, you know, his body control, his coordination, his finishing touch. He was 71% at the rim last year. I mean, this is a potentially elite finisher prospect. So finding situations to get him downhill was kind of the hard part, because it was mostly open court. But now it's kind of coming together as far as what I've seen so far, as far as creating that advantage in the half court. So really thrilled what I'm seeing from him early on. And, you know, to your point about Kofi declaring as well and then coming back subsequently when Ayo did, if that should speak to his leadership, you know, Kofi's not a high intangible guy, and he wanted to stick with Ayo because Io's kind of turning into quite a leader from what I've heard. And I also want to note that he's not like one of those alpha, you know, alpha leaders that you're not really wanting to follow him. But, right. I mean, he's the youngest sibling in his family. He has a bunch of sisters and, you know, his family goes to the games. He's got a great father that's like, you know, kind of alpha in his family. So if he's being a leader, it's not because he's, you know, it's hard for me to articulate, but he's the right kind of leader from what I'm seeing so far. He's not overstepping his boundaries. It's authentic based off. So it's really good to see. But moving on to Adam Miller. Adam Miller is a guy that really impressed me early on because of the way he's played within the flow of the offense. I was worried he would really want to be the number one option coming in just because he seemed like a high ego guy. But he really has taken a nice, nice secondary scoring role to Ayo, and operating off his breakdowns has been impressive to watch so far. He's shot the ball pretty well. He's shown good flashes at least. I'm not sure he will be a draft guy this year, but there is kind of buzz that he wants to be a one and done. So he'll be an interesting one to watch, but I've been pleasantly surprised by his defensive engagement, his effort, and his creation on the offensive end, on and off the ball. I think he's definitely a guy that's going to warrant maybe first round talk next year if he continues to develop, and definitely a draft pick this year so far.
Yeah.
But I've been pleasantly surprised with Adam Miller.
I think that one more year, you know, that you talk about what it would do for him at least is, like you mentioned, a really elite upside early on with his shot making, space creation, and his on and off ball utilization. That next step that I think would really benefit him coming back next year, he's averaging what I think like one assist per game or something like that.
Yeah, he's mostly operating off the ball
for the first three games. So that next step is putting him on the ball when Ayo and some of those other guys are probably gone, and then, you know, watching and seeing how he progresses as a playmaker and using his gravity to open up advantages and situations for others. That really maximizes his value. So I hope, obviously, we'll see how this year progresses. I hope he does consider that extra year because I think that would really benefit him.
Yeah, I'd love to see him in a higher creation role next year. And alongside guys like Curbelo, who I think is going to be, you know, a great long-term player for Illinois. I don't think he's a one and done at all, even though I love his game. His playmaking craft and manipulation of defenses is just beautiful to watch, but he's got to continue to get better defensively. He's got to provide some scoring value other than, what he's currently contributing. But the future of this Illinois team is really bright with guys like him, Coleman Hawkins, Brandon Lieb on that team. There's a lot to like moving forward for Illinois basketball. And I think they're going to have, you know, notable draft prospects for the next couple of years with these guys. On the other hand, Kofi, I don't really think Kofi's an NBA prospect. I don't think he processes the game at a high level. I don't think he defends adequately enough, and I don't see the intangible side with him. So he's a guy that may go overseas. But or it'd be a G League guy. But every time I watch him, his processing is just rather poor, and I just struggle to see where he adds value other than being a big physical dunker. And I mean, his hands aren't that great for rebounding or blocking shots. His arms are rather short, so not my favorite guy. But you know, he's a he still has some value as a dunker. But if you compared him to like Azubuike, you know, you take Udoka in pretty much every context.
Yeah.
Just in that role. If that tells you anything.
That tells you anything about our evaluation.
Well, yeah. So not huge on him, but really huge on their latter, like, you know, their younger players. Also, yeah. I like Georgi Bashanashvili quite a bit as a international candidate, probably next year. Guy that could go pro overseas. He's an awesome guy. We'll have to talk about more on some occasion, but international teams definitely have their eye on him.
Yeah, definitely a bright future for Illinois. And Curbelo, especially, like you mentioned, could be a multi-year guy, but I've been just so impressed with his craft and his wiggle. He brings his two backgrounds of being from overseas in Puerto Rico and also spending some time in New York together. It's fun to watch him play basketball.
Indeed. Would you like to tell us about your home Arizona State?
I would. My Sun Devils off to a good start this year. Could have, if they would have beaten Villanova, it obviously would have been an all-time level start. But from the prospect side of things, Josh Christopher, I think, you know, he's been a guy that was, although he was rated super high coming in, rated as the highest prospect in ASU history coming in for basketball, he was kind of underrated by some. I had my skeptical moments of his advantage creation offensively, kind of just with his lack of burst. And we still see that. But, man, I mean, the scoring has just been potent early on for Christopher at all three levels. Off the catch, he's taken, you can tell, massive strides over his time in high school and AAU to this point. And with the ball in his hands, he's been tremendous. I think as a shot creator, he's just so fun to watch. Another guy I would almost dare consider must-watch basketball at this point with the way that he's creating for himself on the ball. He's got that D-Wade pump fake draw foul in his bag. He's got the Embiid when you feel the contact and you rip through. He's got that in his bag. And he's doing it just such a high percentage early on too. Great body control, great rim pressure early on. He's been spectacular finishing, I believe, as well. If my numbers are right, I think he's 22 of 28 around the rim. I'd have to check on that though. I think there's areas of improvement for him for sure in terms of his mechanics as a catch and shoot off ball guy. That's really where I'm looking for him to maximize his value, is because he's so athletic from a vertical standpoint. I want to see him slash more towards the rim. I want to see him used as a slasher more often. There are concerns about him as a ball handler because he's off to a great start creating advantages, creating shots for himself. It's still noticeable. He doesn't have the quickest first step. There's the lack of burst that's evident. But, I mean, some of these change of direction dribble moves that he has in his bag have only gotten better since high school, since AAU ball. And I mean, one to point out, to be super specific, is just his between the legs step back has created so much separation for his mid-range pull-up on multiple accounts early on in the year. And he's got great balance on that move as well to set his feet. I think he's just a really intriguing scorer from the shot creation standpoint. And I haven't been all, you know, that down on his defense early as well. He's had some moments on ball where he's definitely flashed that he could be an impactful guy. There's just been a major, you can tell, uptick in effort from his AAU days on the ball, whether that's, you know, getting around screens, using his wide frame to kind of avoid screens, to work through them, using his good feet to stay with quicker guards. He's got really active hands. My really only, I'd say, downside to early on has been off the ball. He seemed lost early on and kind of disengaged. But I've been super impressed with Josh Christopher early on.
Yeah, I caught that Villanova game from him, and it was just a, you know, pretty incredible display of creation. And I thought it showed, you know, just how good he could be as a high option scorer. I love his confidence. I really like his his finishing that he's shown so far. But I would like to see some more off ball improvements on both ends if he really wants to stick, because that is imperative to be able to be that that off guard guy as well. You know, he's not going to get on ball reps constantly, so super important that he develops there. What about Marcus Bagley?
Man, yeah, Marcus Bagley too. It's been a really pleasant surprise, the fact that he's coming along this far so early. Obvious thing to talk about with Bagley has been his shooting. Off catch, off dribble, from range. He's really an elite shooting prospect at his size, at 6'8". He has beautiful mechanics, really nothing I'd change. Just a really beautiful looking shot that I think is going to continue to get better. He's probably, honestly, like, I've watched through the first four games twice on film and all while live. I think he has set the record in this four game sample size of the most threes that I've ever seen go in and out. Like, and that's a great sign when a three goes in and out for a shooting prospect. That's not something that you can that can be recorded on the stat sheet or in the box score, but it's something that you see. And these close misses, I mean, he's still shooting a great percentage despite them. I do have my concerns though. Obviously, he's got great size. I do wonder, does he still have growing to do? His brother's 6'10". Maybe he gets to that. Maybe he doesn't. I'm wondering now, where else does he affect the game? He's 2 for 6 inside the paint. That's it. Early on, hasn't seemed comfortable around the rim at all as a finisher. And defensively, especially on the ball, his feet are choppy. Used primarily as kind of the drop big early on at ASU. And he's struggled in closeout situations. He seemed off balance. He really hasn't impressed me defensively at all. Looking for that to grow as the year goes on.
Yeah, I'm very glad you mentioned that, because I recall watching him in the Villanova game, and they were using him in like basic soft drop, like as a five, basically. And it did not look good. Like, it seems. You know, I don't understand from a coaching perspective why you would do that, because he doesn't have elite rim protection skills. He's not going to be that deterring of a drop guy. And if you're going to use him in soft, like, I can see how that could work. But, I don't get using him as a drop defender. Like, I don't know. Do you mask him off the ball, try to put him on an off-ball wing? Or, that's going to be an interesting thing to watch develop from a decision-making perspective, because it does not seem like the best spot for him. And based on his foot speed in general, I don't like him in POA much either. So that may be concerning. His defense hasn't really impressed me either. I think there's a lot of development needed there. But the shooting is pretty undeniable so far. I mean, 10 of 25 early on. Beautiful stroke in a lot of scenarios and the confidence to match. So if he can really develop on the defensive side, I think he's a first-round prospect. But and some would argue that, you know, he's still going to be a first-round prospect because he's a 6'8 guy that can shoot. But if he's a liability on D, that might be a problem.
Yeah, for sure.
To say the least.
And it was, it's a misconception again with people that don't understand the differentiating factors in terms of like at what we call athleticism. Vertically, he's an astounding athlete. He's a major lob threat. We haven't seen him as such so far. But horizontally, moving his feet, sliding his feet, staying with guards, like we mentioned, his choppy kind of closeout, that just doesn't look natural. He's not really in a stance defensively. That's worrying. And that's where he's really struggled early on. Last point on Bagley, I'd love to see him deployed in different situations on offense that would kind of unlock his interior game. Cause we've seen him be able to do it off the catch, off the dribble, whatever it is. But use him in the short roll once in a while, use him as a pick and pop guy, use him in different situations. It'd be beneficial for ASU's offense as well. That's really stagnant and ISO heavy.
Indeed. And he is going to be, for these reasons, as far as finding a fit for him and exposing him to multiple situations and roles, he's going to be one of the more interesting cases to watch from a developmental perspective. So he's a fascinating player to me, and I hope you keep close tabs on him during the rest of this year. I'll be relying on you for that.
Will do.
Remy
last
Martin.
Point. Yeah, last point on Remy Martin, just to say that we mentioned him. I still don't view him as an NBA guy. He declared last year.
Me neither.
He's just kind of an out of control, if you want to call him, primary initiator for AAU right ASU right now. I have him as a negative defender as well. Not really great on or off the ball. I will say though, he's slippery around the rim. He's good at using his body to create advantages against bigger guys and take people off the dribble and get him on his hip. He's an out of control playmaker on times. He has these plays where where it makes you kind of, face palm. And there's also plays where it's like, wow, that's an excellent pass out to the shooter right in the shooting pocket. Like great job getting a paint touch and using your gravity to kick out two shooters. Like he has those moments where he flashes, potential, like even third point guard upside, maybe G League point guard upside. His shot making is frustrating at times, or lack thereof. His jumper still doesn't look great. He's more of an overseas guy, if you will, from you.
Yeah, I have him low in that category as well. The frame too, 6 foot, 170-ish pounds is just not ideal as far as a guy that should be in NBA conversations when he's not a plus defender, as you put it. Not a huge Remy Martin fan. All right, should we get on to questions?
Yeah. Thank you again for everybody that left questions for us under our tweet. We got 7 of them today, all very good questions as well. Number one here coming from Blake Harrison.
Thanks,
Blake. Yeah, our guy. Thanks for the question, Blake. Do either of you have any sleepers in this draft class early on? Predictions of any dramatic stock risers by the end of the season? Alex, do you want to kick it out?
Sure. One of my sleepers that really hasn't got a lot of press recently is Carlos Alcén from Real Madrid. He's a 6'4 point guard, lead guard prospect with some really great pick and roll initiation at times. If he can really show that he can shoot the ball and, take some steps as a finisher, I think he could rise up to top 20 on boards. But the shot, you have a lot of reason to buy it. He's going to be able to fill a larger role now that Campazzo's in Denver and he has Sergio Yule to learn from. So I think he's a guy that could really show his stuff this year with Real Madrid in some capacity. So real, really big Carlos Alcén fan and hoping for that breakout.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think I finished with him at 30 last year before he withdrew from the draft. Super, super interesting and great point about Campazzo now being in the NBA on the Nuggets now, and his increased role. I'll definitely be watching him as the season goes on. For me, it's Nashawn Highland, Nashawn Bones Highland from VCU. Just an elite shooting prospect. I deemed him and James Bouknight as two of my favorite returners that I think could end up having first round cases going into the 2021 draft. And so far this year with Nashawn, I mean, the frame's still a concern, the finishing's still a concern, but what has been really great to see is that he is getting to the rim, getting those opportunities more often than he has in the past, using his wiggle, using his craft. And I just think, again, he's a lengthy guy, great positional size, that, again, is an elite shooter with a little bit of shift to his game as well, really good handle. And I think a smart player on both sides of the ball as well, especially when he's off the ball defensively and offensively. And I think that's something that's going to continue to develop. I think he's someone that's going to ultimately have a few breakout performances in a row with his shooting. That is going to coincide with that second question Blake asked in terms of dramatic stock risers. I think that could really end up raising his stock as the year goes on.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on, our next question from Nick's Draft Guy. If you could take one of the high-profile freshmen, and move them to another school and they're instantly eligible to play, who would it be and what team would you put them on?
Yeah, this is a great question. And like we mentioned, the obvious answer is Cade. We kind of already hinted at it towards moving Cade to Gonzaga or one of those other high major powerhouse programs would just be ridiculous with the skill level and guys that he has around him. But for me, at least, I know you had a few interesting ones. For me, it'd probably be BJ Boston. I already kind of hinted at it. Maybe taking his talents to a school like Oklahoma State in terms of their national ranking where Cade's at would maybe even be a better utilization for his skill set for his shot creation, having the offense run through him as opposed to playing in a system kind of like he is now. I think would honestly personally be better for his development.
Yeah, I think you could make a strong argument that him playing on a young team is going to hurt his development. Yeah. At least one that's as young as this Calipari team. But, yeah, I think there's an argument for that for sure. A couple of mine were Caleb Love. I'd love to see him in an offense with more spacing, maybe more creators because, you know, the flashes of spacing just are pretty pitiful so far for a creator prospect. And we could see him face similar issues that we saw from Cole Anthony last year. And then Henry Coleman, I'd love to see him get minutes, you know, if he could go somewhere where he could fill that modern four spot, that would be ideal. Like somewhere like maybe Texas Tech, that I would, right. I would like that.
It'd be a great fit. I'd love to see Henry Coleman played at all. Hopefully maybe tonight we'll see a little bit more of him in the Illinois Duke game. Number three coming here from Dominic Stern. It's early on, but what college basketball player has raised his stock in your eyes the most?
I personally think Jalen Suggs moving to the near top, you know, of this great of a class as quickly as he has is so impressive. He's a guy I liked quite a bit early on in the preseason. And I think he was top five for me, but moving up to even two is a pretty dramatic rise for him. And the fact that people are even considering talking about him for the number one pick just shows how high his stock has risen since then.
Yeah, for sure. I think we kind of hinted at this as well. This is kind of an interesting talking point, but Luka Garza, maybe even not in terms of necessarily draft projection, because there's still just those obviously major concerns about him on the defensive side of the ball at the next level. But I mean, they're numbers that you can't deny. Like they have to take, he's playing out of his mind early on this year, which kind of, again, brings up an interesting conversation about, you know, offensive value versus defensive negative. And which is very similar to a conversation we had extensively, probably one of the most extensive conversations we had in the 2020 class about Obi Toppin.
Indeed. It's going to be really interesting seeing how teams value Garza, considering guys like Toppin that were pretty much projected to be complete defensive liabilities. You know, how they're going to value that this year. And Garza is, you know, an incredible offensive talent on, you know, at the college basketball level. And I think he could be at the international level as well. So I wonder if teams are going to start putting him into, you know, a legit draft consideration because of his production. Because
yeah,
when you think about it, I mean, if he's a defensive liability, Obi's a defensive liability as well. Very productive offensively, can, you know, highly skilled. So is Obi Toppin. The only real difference is Obi jumps really high. I mean, as far as a prospect goes, he has vertical spacing. That's something Garza doesn't have. So is the vertical spacing really so valuable that the, you know, the Knicks took him top 10 for that one, you know, skill? Right. Guys like Garza, because Garza's going to be productive in a defensive negative too. Julia Okafor comes to mind.
Exactly. So, it's a great point.
You know, I guess we're paying premium for vertical spacing now, though, for these older guys, if you're, or older prospects, if you're the Knicks. But you know, just a thought.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely an interesting thought and one that makes a lot of sense as well. Number four coming here from Will Morris. Thanks for the question, Will. How concerned are you by Caleb Love's finishing woes?
You know, it's kind of a small sample size so far, and the spacing hasn't been great. So, honestly, I'm not ready to make any definitive conclusions about Caleb Love's finishing. Obviously, you'd like to see the numbers be better, but there's still a lot of basketball to be played, and I don't feel I've gotten a good enough sense for his finishing projection with the current context.
Yeah, I think I'd be more concerned overall about him just as a general score. I think, you know, from the finishing standpoint, this is a guard with a 6'9 wingspan. I think he's going to be all right, personally, at least from what I've seen early on. And like Alex said, still trying to get a feel for his game. He was a top-of-the-line finisher at the high school level, though. So it is interesting to see how that's kind of now shifting a little bit now that he's playing against legitimate college big guys. I'm still not worried. I think that's something that he'll feel out and progress over time, because he's got tools in terms of his extension and body control that we've seen in the past that I think will bode well for him for the future. Number five coming here from Jam Hines. What prospect has surprised you the most with a certain skill or tool? I like this question.
Yeah, I think Evan Mobley's processing speed has been something that you know, we knew he was a smart basketball player, but we didn't expect the processing to be as good as it was so far. So that's something I've been really pleasantly surprised by, and is a major stock raiser for me.
Yeah, I won't even say it's like surprised. I mean, that surprised me a little bit how dang good it is, but definitely processing speed on both ends. I'd also say just his to get more specific defensively, his altering of shots, I think, is one of the best skills in this class. He just does so much to affect the way an offense is run. And number six here from Ozil Stan at Thanos Hoops. Thoughts on Josh Giddey and Mojave King, two Australian NBLers that we're going to see in action this year.
Indeed. And without giving too much of our thoughts away so far, because I know we will do an international episode where we'll talk more on these guys. They're not guys I've watched a ton of so far. I think Giddey has upside as far as being, you know, a 6'8 guy, that 6'8, 6'7 guy that can create out of pick and rolls, and is starting to hit some, you know, mid-range pull-ups, getting his jumper a little bit better. You know, the tools for an initiator are undeniable, and the defensive potential, again, it's there, at least to a degree. And Mojave King, 3-and-D guard, a lot of positive things I'm hearing about him. But I need to watch more before I'm really ready to give a long, you know, lecture on what I think he's going to provide to an NBA team. But I see value as a 3-and-D guy right now.
Yeah, I'm same boat as Alex. Familiar with both of their games, but not familiar to lay out any proclamations or anything like that. And I think, like you mentioned with Giddey, he's still got to develop as a shooter for sure. Doesn't have insane athleticism, so he's not one of my favorite international guys, but he is really interesting just off the fact that he's 6'7 and can handle the ball like a 6'2 guard. And for Mojave King, like you mentioned, really I'd say a good upside 3-and-D prospect, a guy that has elite tools defensively. I think I'm most excited out of most international guys to see Mojave King play in the NBL this year. I think it's going to do wonders for his development. Moving on to our last question, though, from Boss Talk NY. We didn't get to talk about this guy today, but we'll talk about him probably on the next episode or whenever we do. Will James Bouknight end up a lottery pick? I know we're both pretty big Bouknight fans here.
I love Bouknight. Yeah, Bouknight's awesome. I think there's a chance he could get that high. It's really just going to depend on if his development continues. As of now, I think he's maybe a mid, late first round guy at best. But I think there's a chance he can move up into that lottery conversation because, you know, he's made legit improvements. I love his shot. He processes the game at a pretty high level. Rebounds the ball really well for a guard. Just needs to really clean up on turnovers, clean up around the rim, find a way to create, more third level advantages. But stellar athlete. You know, there's a lot to like in James Bouknight, and I'm really excited to see how his development turns out this year because he is a top returner for me, and it's been awesome to see him play so well.
Yeah, he's anytime you mesh together the elite burst and the elite handle that he has, just elite again, like I'm saying, stressing that word with his burst and handle, but elite change of pace, elite change of direction. He uses it to set up screens. I think he's a really intriguing upside pick and roll ball handler. Like you mentioned, his shot hasn't made sizable improvements going forward. I still have my notes on number of mechanical changes that could be made to better himself off the catch in terms of his posture and whatnot. But it does look a lot better off the dribble, which is common for young creators like himself. Mm-hmm. But again, elite athlete, and he uses this to his advantage every time he has the ball in his hands. Just has that coveted end-to-end speed. Always looking to attack and move downhill. I'd like to see his rim finishing take a step forward this year, and for him to utilize his skill set truly as an athletic off-ball slasher. And I think, when you put all that together, man, anytime you have a guy that can change pace like he can, shoot like he can at the volume that he's now increased to, coupled with his athleticism, you can make a lottery-level case.
Indeed.
That's about it for today. We're going to edit this up. Might end up making it into a two-parter. Definitely was a long episode. Good talking about a number of these interesting prospects that we're going to see continue to develop and unfold over this college basketball season. You can follow Alex on Twitter at AHB Analytics. You can follow me on Twitter at Ethan Piotti. You can follow the Prospect Podcast at Prospect Pod. Make sure to leave us a like, nice review if you enjoyed. We really appreciate it. Hoping to really take our numbers to the max as this year goes on, if you guys enjoy our content. And we'll be back with hopefully weekly. We got a lot to talk about, so I definitely say weekly episodes breaking down the college basketball prospects, international G League guys. Now that's another added dimension this year. So make sure to leave us a like. Make sure to subscribe to us so you don't miss an episode. And we'll see you guys next time.
Thank you.